Welcome to the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast. This is Vinny with my co-host, Mike. How are you, Mike?
I got a little windburn, but otherwise I'm doing great.
Yeah, I know. It probably took me till about 10 o'clock this morning to stop shivering, too. But we got a lot of good stuff to talk about. This is our special mid-NLCS episode. As the series shifts to Chicago for games 3, 4, 5, we want to talk a little bit about that and about what we see going ahead in the series. But I think most of our time we're going to spend on games 1 and 2 that took place this weekend at Citi Field, which the Mets with a 2-0 lead. The last time we spoke, we spoke about how amazing it was for the Mets to beat the Dodgers in the NLDS. And specifically, we spent a lot of time talking about Jacob deGrom gutting it out with a great performance in Game 5 and the Mets beating Zach Greinke, who is one of the Cy Young candidates for the National League. But lo and behold, Mike, in Games 1 and 2, the Mets pitching was as good, if not better, than deGrom was in that game, and we'll talk about it. And they defeated in Game 2 Jake Arrieta, who probably is the favorite to win the Cy Young in the National League. So in some ways, it's more of the same. It's really picking up where the Mets left off in the NLDS, Mike.
Yeah, I think that this one took me a little bit by surprise. I was hoping for 1 out of 2. I mean, I'm happy to have the 2, but I was looking for 1 out of 2 here. I was convinced this would be a long series. It still might be. It's early in the series, but yeah, those were 2 really good nights. Everything went very well.
I agree. I think that the pitching was great, and we can start with Game 1. Game 1 was Matt Harvey, and Matt Harvey, look, in as much as we all talk about the Dark Knight and the legend of Matt Harvey, this season when he's had a couple of instances where he really had the big stage, I would say he had the game against the Yankees. I would say he had the game against the Nationals right after the debacle, public relations nightmare about the innings limit came out. And in those 2 starts, he did not show up as the superhero that we all consider him to be. So this was another crack at one of those legacy games. And this time he came through. He pitched very well in Game 1. He really seemed to have that bulldog, I'm not going to let them beat me mentality, which is what you really want from the guy besides the great stuff. And he even took one for the team. There was a comebacker that hit him off the right triceps on a cold night that had a sting. I mean, it was stinging for me sitting in the seats, let alone taking a comebacker off the arm. So it had a sting. He gutted it out. It didn't affect his performance. He pitched very well. And supposedly, I think it just came out about an hour or so ago, Terry Collins says that while Harvey's arm is dented, I think is the word they're using, which I think is pretty comical, and swollen, that he's on track to pitch a Game 5 if necessary. Have to throw that in there. But one of the stories, of course, in game one was how the Mets again led by Daniel Murphy, and that's going to be a theme on this show, were able to scrape through enough offense and win that game for 4-2.
Yeah, I think the fun and important thing that happened this weekend was Harvey joined the party, so to speak. I mean, since the Boris stuff happened in the first week of September, he's kind of, sort of been an out-of-sorts situation with Harvey. We know all the things that happened. And one of the things that happened was he just wasn't getting any real type of normal, regular work. And we know there was perhaps good reasons or not good reasons, and that's all been debated already, right? But one thing, and we know this also when the 6-man was instituted from time to time, that Harvey doesn't like it. Meaning, even though a lot of this stuff was meant to protect him, he does seem to want be the guy the most, from what I can see, of these guys, you know, between him and Noah and Max, who seems to pitch about the same no matter what his rest count is. And DeGrom, you know, Harvey seems to be a guy that, even though he's a power pitcher, is a power pitcher where control, which usually is phenomenal for him, is a big piece of the arsenal. And I think he needs work to have control, and I think coming back on just 5 days rest, as far as performance, from a performance standpoint, seems to really work for him.
Definitely.
He was hitting spots.
I think that's a great point. I do think that when Harvey has struggled this year, and I use struggled a little bit loosely because even when he struggles, he pitches pretty well. It has been a command issue, and command is usually tied to the regular workload. So I do think that matters, and I think it showed. And I also think, you know, it's easy for us who are not on the field to talk about, you know, who's a competitor and who toughs it out and all that sort of thing, like we know what we're talking about. But in the case of Matt Harvey, you could see it. He wears his heart on his sleeve on the field. And you could tell that, you know, he had the command in game one on Saturday night, but also he had that determination. He knew that this was a moment that he just could not let slip by. And he came through, and it was something that the team needed. He wanted to get off to a good start in the series and win game one at home. And they did. And between they got just enough offense to four runs. They had a home run by Travis d'Arnaud, which hit the apple, which you got to love. And we talked a little bit on the preview show the other day about how the Mets did a great job in the NLDS with the whole introductions and Tejada and lingering the camera on Hamilton. Give them another little touch of credit. They showed up in game two with a bandage on the apple to kind of draw attention to the shot that d'Arnaud hit, which was pretty cool.
It is cute.
But the other way that they scored on Monday was, of course, courtesy of Daniel Murphy. But he didn't stop there. Segue to game two. Daniel Murphy with another home run in the first inning of game two off of Jake Arrieta, yet another Cy Young candidate. His fifth home run of the postseason, which really set the tone. At the time, it gave the Mets a 3-0 lead, three batters into game two, which the Mets ultimately won 4-1, and we should talk about the pitching there in a minute because that was also a key story. But Murphy, my goodness, we talked about Murphy's heroics in Game 5 of the NLDS, both his home run in that game as well as his base running. Murphy with more home runs in these games, with a great defensive play to end Game 1. What is going on with Daniel Murphy, Mike?
Well, first thing I have to do is ask you a question. I mean, on the ball Saturday night, did he hit it right to you? How close was that ball? I mean, you must have had a shot at that ball.
The ball on Saturday night, the home run to the Pepsi porch, hit
right.
The foot, basically the bottom. Railing is not the right word. The bottom concrete,
mm-hmm.
right where the
mm-hmm.
railing, where the metal railing sits, three
mm-hmm.
seats away. Three seats away
yeah,
from me.
Yeah, I knew it had to be right by you because I know where you
yeah.
sit.
And I genuinely thought I had a shot.
I want to know how good an outfielder you would be for catching, 430 feet fly balls. Did you realize it was right to you, like when it left the bat?
I did. And what's really funny is this is the second. There have been a few good Pepsi Porch home runs this year. But this is the second one that I actually thought up until the last second was going to hit me, and both of them were by
mm-hmm.
Murphy. In the Saturday night game against the Nationals, he
mm-hmm.
hit one that
mm-hmm.
his home
yeah.
run went directly over my head, two seats behind me. And I thought, oh, my God, I'm either going to catch this or it's going to knock me unconscious. And it went over my head. And this one, I thought it's either going to catch me or it's going to hit me in the chest. And it ended up being – it curved just a little bit, two seats to my left, and hit the concrete foot railing and fell back to the field. So Murphy's trying to give me a souvenir, so I thank him for that.
Well, it's funny. My interesting – and I want to bring this up because, you know, it's easy to forget this. So it's crazy he hits the home run on Saturday night. And then last night, let's not forget. Now, the reason I bring it up is because I was sitting in 503 upstairs down the right field line, and you lose, you know, that's such is life, especially in the postseason. One thing about that, where I was, is you lose a little bit of, you know, the right field corner. You just don't, you know, you just, you know, pay attention to what the crowd's doing. There's a point at which you don't know where the ball is going. And so let's not forget, because I wasn't sure until the crowd reaction, he, right before he hit the home run on Sunday night last night, he hit a ball even further that was almost a home
run. And that never happens, the foul home run followed by the home run. We talk about it when we go back in time, which we always somehow end up talking about the June 11th, 2005 game with Cliff Floyd's home run. He did that, where he hit a home run foul and then hit the home run. But
I mean,
other than that, you never see it, Mike. And he did it here.
It's hard to do. I mean, you get your pitch. They always talk about that. I mean, right? You know, you get your pitch, and if it's fouled by a foot, that means you got your one pitch to drive, and you missed it. You know, but
it was Jake Arrieta, Mike. It was not. This wasn't a slouch.
Well, neither is Kershaw and Greinke and Lester and all these guys. I mean, that's the thing to remember. It's nuts. And then, look, it's just with Murphy, it's just we just got to enjoy it. I mean, there's no other way to put it. To play at second base, I mean, we joked about it the other day with Steve and Ed when we had our pre-series discussion. I mean, you know, so now he's making fantastic base running plays, making fantastic defensive plays, and most Mets fans, so we're not special when I say this, have always appreciated him as a really fine hitter. But not really because he's a power hitter.
And no, definitely
power,
not.
It's just like, holy smokes.
And his holy smokes. But, Mike, his career high in home runs was this season with 14. He has five in the seven postseason games. So it's just amazing.
I probably noticed it, but not enough to really focus on it. Of those 14, a lot came late.
That's true.
And so he definitely something I saw Sandy interviewed, and, you know, I think it was after the NLDS where he said he's just a different hitter. He drives the ball more now. You know, I guess he's learned how to turn on balls more and drive them. And you see that sometimes with guys that are really good hitters that's just one more thing they add to their game. I think until the back problems, I would think like Mattingly would first was more of a use the whole field hitter and then started hitting home runs. So
yeah,
almost
I think
like
that's
Murphy
true.
Started to learn that there are balls he can turn, you know, there are balls that he's got more power and he can turn on certain balls and he's pulling, you know, and pull them. And that takes him to just another level as a hitter.
I agree. And this is not the time or the place to talk about whether or not Murphy will be here next year. We'll have plenty of time to talk about that in the off season. But a lot of people, that's starting to get into that discussion of does any of this change the perception of Daniel Murphy as a long-term fixture here. But we'll talk about that later. Look, the offense, it's funny. The Mets win these first two games, but they score four runs in both games. But really, they score four runs, you know, very limited offense. I think they had five hits yesterday. I can't recall how many hits they had in game one. But they, you know, it's not like they're having a lot of opportunities and a lot of offense. Yesterday, they scored the three runs with the first three batters, a Granderson single, a right double, the Murphy two-run homer, right double didn't run. They scored another run later in, I think, in the third inning, and then that was it for them. Game one, they had the home run from Murphy, home run from Darnell. I think they had one other rally score run. So they're not doing a heck of a lot offensively, which could have been a problem if it wasn't for the pitching. We talked about Matt Harvey. Now we have to shift to game two. Noah Syndergaard, who we had some debate on the last show about Syndergaard. Would he pitch game two? Would Steven Matz pitch game two? I think we all came to the consensus that while we may like to see Noah Syndergaard pitch game two that we thought it would be Steven Matz. I know that Artie from Brooklyn was upset about that because it would fit the narrative of the Mets really kind of managing workload of the young pitchers, and Syndergaard had that inning in game five of the NLDS. So technically it was only 2 days rest, although that was only one inning. We didn't think it would happen. It did happen. He pitched 5 2/3. He pitched really well. He struck out 9. He only gave up 1 run, and he looked great in this game. And then the Mets bullpen, which it even seemed like Terry Collins was trying to avoid the traditional bullpen guys, basically trying to go Colon until he could get Familia in as early as possible. Yesterday, he got a big, big out from Jonathan Neese, which we could talk about in a second. But other than that, it was back to the old formula, quote unquote, which has been, you know, mixed results formula of Addison Reed for the 7th inning, Tyler Clippard for the 8th inning. And those guys came through. They really did. And they got us to Familia in the 9th, and Familia pitched very well, as he has this whole postseason, to get the save in the 9th. And it makes you feel good, not just about the great starting pitching that the Mets have gotten this entire postseason to date, but maybe that their bullpen is not something that we have to avoid at all costs. Do you think I'm reading too much into one performance, Mike?
I think it's one performance, but, you know, good is good. I think that the bullpen, well, I don't want to forget about Thor, so I will get to the bullpen, but I do want to discuss Syndergaard. I think that that was just, It's last night's game for me is the one that really, I have to say it tonight, Vinny. I mean, after last night was the first time I really started to think, you know, we might not win the World Series, but we really could. And up until then, you know, I picked us to win any other series. I picked us to win this series. So I know it's odd to say, but I was kind of taking everything series by series and thinking, okay, this is nice. Hey, maybe we can win again. Maybe we can win another series. And not getting, I know I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but it was just something about now, I mean, all the pitches, everything we've always said when we were frustrated about maybe not having enough offense, about how this is the type of pitching you don't want to waste because this is the type of pitching that wins short series, it's happening. It's all unfolding. It's exactly what's happening. Is they're pitching in the postseason the way you would hope so. And I think with workloads being what they are and pitchers not being the old Tom Seaver or even Dwight Gooden, if we look up his innings counts, you know, or Ron Dolly and workhorses they used to be, postseason pitching a lot of times seems to be about having guys that, for whatever reason, aren't all of a sudden gassed and not at their best because their tank ran empty because the tank seemed to not be as big. You know, you got 12-gallon tanks, and they used to have 20-gallon tanks.
Mm-hmm.
Our pitchers do not seem to be running out of gas, and we do know that they, quote-unquote, you know, and I was critical, maybe them a little bit. I don't know if that's why. Jake Arrieta doesn't look the same. Even the Cardinals roughed him up a little bit. I had a lot of Cubs fans around me last night. Not by the end. Four of them that were sitting in front of me only lasted 4 innings. So I guess when you have that much experience with losing, you know when you're going to lose.
Exactly.
They noticed right away that, like, he was more like 92, 93. And they kept going, oh, well, that's not his usual velocity. So I know it was great we hit him, but he also didn't seem to me to be at his best, and he wasn't his best the last fall with the Cardinals. It could be a lot of different things. But you wonder, these guys aren't used to pitching. You know, we're in October now. And
right.
Everybody, all these guys are like 180 shut them down, 190 shut them down. Our guys still seem to be strong, and that's, you know, the longer that can be the case, that's a big advantage.
Well,
now,
let's follow that thought, Mike, through to looking ahead to the series resuming tomorrow in Chicago with Jacob
DeGrom.
Now, we praised Jacob DeGrom, rightfully so, for his performance in Game 5 of the NLDS. And we when we had the panel on our last show, we talked about how he did not have his best stuff, but that he battled through. There were guys on base every inning. If you're going to take a little bit of, I don't want to use the word pessimistic view, but if you're going to take some rose-colored glasses off, you could say, is the situation that you're describing with Jake Arrieta and the tank, is it perhaps a concern about Jacob deGrom going into Game 3? Is the fact that there were a lot of base runners and the Dodgers just couldn't get that big hit an indicator that deGrom perhaps maybe doesn't have as much in the tank as what we saw from Syndergaard the other night?
Yeah, I think that's going to be something interesting to watch tomorrow, because I think that, you know, the Cubs have more guys that can really damage you if you're having a rough inning, and just, you know, so there's that. And he needed to be, but Jake was rode very hard in the first game of the, you know, Dodgers series, a lot of pitches and a lot of high-stress pitches. And then the second game, a lot of high-stress pitches because of the way the game unfolded. So it will be interesting to see. And he's on regular rest again, no extra rest. The way this is lined up, though, I mean, hopefully Jake wins. I'd love a sweep. You know, I'm just keep going. We've got a situation where, I don't know, you know, hopefully we can do some type of damage in Chicago. If we take the whole thing in Chicago, great. But if I did my math correctly, we've got Syndergaard and DeGrom on Syndergaard on the extra rest on Saturday, because there's two off days in here.
That's right.
I don't know. I'm just thinking Jake might be able to get a rest because I don't think we're going to need him twice in this series. Remember, I picked the Mets in six to begin with.
No, that's a great point, because if the Mets only take one out of three in Chicago, and with DeGrom game three, Mets game four, Harvey game five, I think game five is going to be Lester. Joe Madden rather, said he's not going to bring Lester back on game four, which means games three and four, the starting pitchers are, I guess, Kyle Hendricks, and I'm not sure who was announced as Game 4. I just know they said it wasn't going to be John Lester. I assume that means it's Hamill.
I'm assuming Hamill as well.
Yeah, so if that's the case for Hendricks and Hamill against DeGrom and Mats, and then a rematch of Lester and Harvey, I'm thinking that the Mets winning one of those three games is not by any means a stretch of the imagination with those pitching matchups. Two out of three starts to feel really good, Mike. However, if DeGrom doesn't really have it, they lose game three, you feel like if they split those last two, come home with Syndergaard game six, DeGrom game seven, you are feeling pretty good. And I am not trying to count my chickens before they hatch. But it just seems like the pitching matchups, everything is set up where the Mets are in pretty good shape to get this home with the lead. And then, you know, it's very difficult to not like their chances to be able to close it out at home. It's difficult for teams to win 6-7 on the road.
You touched on it. I do want to touch on it as well. And I know we're running, you know, we're almost out of time on our shorter podcast. The bullpen, I do think it was a big deal. I don't think you're making too much of it. I'm going to attribute it to the fact that it was only a five-game series, and Terry really decided in that Dodgers series would it be a five-game series. He's just going to let out all the stops. But, you know, there's still a long way to go. And, you know, two seven-game series after that. And he has to start trusting a little bit more Reed and Clipper. That's why we got these guys. You know, these guys are rentals, basically. I mean, who knows about Reed, but he might be. I could see him being non-tendered. We got these guys for now. They're former closers. That you can't, you know, I love Familia. I mean, and again last night, you know, Saturday night. But, right? You can only ride them for 4 innings a game. And we're going to need these guys to step up. I'm sure Terry thinks about it.
And he made Terry made some comments.
I think these guys are up to the task. The game that, unfortunately, and that's the way baseball is now, you have to be a little careful how you use them because for some reason a lot of these guys can't pitch unless they start the inning. And Reed might be one of those guys. But he really has pitched well since we've got them. I know that what I'll call the Chase Utley game, he had a rough day, but there was guys all over the bases when he came in. So he had a great inning yesterday, nice clean inning. I felt very comfortable with the way he was going after the hitters. Clippins got a little bit more of a right-handed John Franco vibe to me, which is he gets the job done, but, you know, maybe I got to have a beer while he's doing it. But he got the job done.
No, I'm with you. Look, I do think that, you know, it's easy. It's probably very tempting for Terry to say, gee, let me use Bartolo Colon as the bridge to Familia every night. But I don't think that's a sustainable model, you know, in every game. And I think that you do need to have these guys. Now, that's not to say that, you know, in a scenario where DeGrom maybe struggles a bit or Matt struggles or Harvey, this tricep thing becomes a problem, that he's not looking to figure out, can I use Colon for three innings a game? I think that's fine. But I think to start thinking of him as the seventh inning guy becomes a problem because then you don't have him for those long stretches where you might want to go to somebody early. And so when you have the chance to use Clifford and Reed, you have to. But I think you make an excellent point, which I don't think any of the other analysis I've seen has made, which is about having these guys start innings. And, you know, I sometimes wonder about whether Terry thinks that. Like, we talked about that the other night in Game 5 of the NLDS, how he had Syndergaard warming up to come in when DeGrom was on the ropes a little bit with guys on base. And that was precisely the place I would not want to bring in a guy like Syndergaard. I would have rather, you know, hell, if it was the fifth inning with two outs and guys on base, I'd rather bring in a relief pitcher, you know, perhaps a guy like Hansel Robles or something like that, to get an out, and then the next inning bring in Syndergaard in those situations. But, you know, perhaps that's a key to this whole thing. Is I know that they interviewed Terry after the game last night, and he talked about how bullpen roles are kind of out the window. Guys are all doing whatever it takes to win. But sometimes that's not that might be good lip service, but maybe that's not reflected in guys' performance, and you still need to figure out where to put guys in the best situations where they're comfortable enough to succeed. And if he's able to do that, I definitely like their chances, man.
The thing you got to remember as far as we're never going to be in terrible shape with this bullpen because the guy at the back at the end of it is just on fire. I mean, he's the pitching equivalent of Murphy right now.
I was just going to say, we've just spent 28 minutes and we could have basically summarized this whole show by saying Murphy Familia and then hanging up the phone. Because it's not that much of an understatement to say that it's those two guys that have gotten us where we are. And look, you know, Murph, you want to say Murph can't do this forever. And while we know that's true, I'm going to make two counterpoints and then I'll let you give your comments before we go. My two counterpoints would be one, I also don't think Cespedes can struggle as he has. David Wright is not going to struggle as he has. So while none of those guys I'm counting on to become Murph, I think when Murph cools down, some other guys are going to start to hit just because they have that on the back of their baseball card. So I would counter with that. But then the other thing I would say is we don't need Murph to do it forever. We need him to do it for a handful more games. I'm not being a pig. I'm just saying we've seen this before. I mean, Carlos Beltran 2004 postseason with the Astros, he did it for a stretch and it didn't stop. Sometimes this kind of stuff happens. So let's enjoy it while we can and hope that as he starts to tail off some of these other guys who really haven't done much. I mean, Cespedes has had a relatively quiet postseason so far. You know, if he gets hot, you know, like he was during his stretch in August, then Murphy can afford to be a human being.
Hey, throw Duder in there too. If Duder ever got going, he's a streaky guy.
Great point. All right, so Mike, before I let you go, since you are the Nostradamus of the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast, are you sticking with your Mets in six prediction, or if we give you another bite at the apple, what would you say now?
No, I'm out there with it. I can see the Cubs taking two out of three in Wrigley. I'll be happy to be wrong, but I'm going to stick with it.
All right, sounds good. Look, I think I said Mets in six. Although I may have said seven, I'm not sure.
We'll check the tape,
but if regardless, if I'm given another shot, I think I would now come back with Mets in six. Cause I could see how it plays out that way. And I'd be very happy with that, but let's see. Thanks everyone. Thanks Mike for joining. We will be back at the end of the series, or sooner. We'll see what happens after the Chicago series. Depending on how it plays out in these three games in Chicago.
Yes.
All right, sounds great. Thanks again, everyone. We'll talk to you soon, and let's go Mets.